About 50 years ago, my wife and I were watching television at my parents' house, and it was sometime in the early 60s, I believe. We may still even have been courting at that time. I don't quite remember. But my father, my wife and I were watching very early evening television, and it was still bright outside. And my mother was out watching. My mother was out playing tennis. My mother was an avid fan of a program called Dallas, which is probably better known on both sides of the Atlantic than the particular program we were watching. The program that we were watching, the leading role was Sir Simon de Canterville, and that was being played by Bruce Forsyth, who was the Canterville ghost. The programme was about halfway through when my mother returned home and without further ado switched channels, saying Dallas has already started, and in view of the subject matter today, it was probably quite a good idea. Many years later, when my wife and I had got our own television set, there was another production of The Canterville Ghost on the small screen. Now, having been deprived of the end of the tale those many years before, we thought, well, here's a time to catch up on what we've missed. The film or play is based on a short story by Oscar Wilde, and it runs to about 25 pages. It can be read in an hour or so. Now, please don't ask me how the actual play ended, because I don't now remember, but I have just recently reread the story. The only reason this comes up now is because I recently found a DVD of the play in a charity shop. And the DVD has on the front of it Magic and Fantasy. Now, that should have set bells ringing, alarm bells ringing, but the censor's certification overrode that because it says it's a used certificate, which means that it's a appropriate for youngsters to watch it as well as adults, you know, so it was supposedly good family entertainment. I was thinking in the charity shop, yes, I remember this, it was quite entertaining. So I invested 10 pence in purchasing the disc, intending to view it at a later date. I then read the synopsis of the story, which is found on the reverse of the sleeve, and I realised that it was not quite the wisest choice that I had made that day. And I think the best thing I'd do here is to read what is written on the sleeve of this particular DVD. It's headed The Canterville Ghost. When Professor Hiram Otis gets a research grant to study in England, his family is thrilled to learn that they all live in a real castle called Canterville Hall. The castle's most notable feature turns out to be the ghost of Sir Simon de Canterville, who died 400 years ago. Visible only to Virginia Otis, aged 16, and her two younger brothers. Eventually, Sir Simon confides his situation to Virginia. He is doomed to haunt the castle forever, unless a golden girl can be convinced to travel to the other world to plead his case before the Angel of Death. Virginia, feeling that after 400 years there is no time to be wasted, immediately agrees, and the two disappear into the fireplace. So I began to ask myself, what was really so wrong here? And I'd like to share with you some of the things which came to light from what I was looking at. First of all, an angel is a messenger. And in the vast majority of cases, the angel is a messenger of God. And only very rarely is the word angel used in any other context. Now, in the time which is available to me, it's my purpose to draw our attention to the fact that whenever films or plays depict the dead as anything other than dead, or angels as anything except as servants of God, there is something pretty sinister afoot. Trivializing or glamorizing the spirit world should also set alarm bells ringing. And it behoves us all to exercise extreme caution, because this area is full of pitfalls for the unwary. Now, plays depicting ghosts doomed to haunt the earth are not uncommon, and many would ask or say, it's all pretty harmless, isn't it? But is it? Some plays even have a romantic attachment developing between the dead, in quotes, and the living. Some are really weird. In the written work of The Canterville Ghost, the spirit world is portrayed as being weak and ineffective, and even subject to the actions of human beings. When dabbling with the occult, sometimes disastrous reactions occur in a remarkably short space of time. Another thing which we need to ask ourselves is, what is a ghost? Well, my dictionary defines a ghost as the soul of a dead person, and I think we'd all agree that that is a contradiction in terms. The dictionary goes on to say that a spectre, especially of a dead person, appearing to the living. A spectre has no material existence, and so we are definitely talking about some being which is not of this world. We are talking about spirits of some description, and demonic spirits at that. Now, in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 18, beginning of verse 10, we find out how God views these sort of things. It is because of this passage of scripture that and others which are very similar to it, that I became so convinced that what I'd invested my 10 pence in was not quite a good investment. So in Deuteronomy chapter 18, beginning in verse 10, we read the following. There shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or daughter to pass through the fire, or that uses divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all of these things are an abomination unto the Eternal, and because of these abominations, the Eternal your God does drive them out from before you. Now, we need to know what God's perspective is on this sort of thing. A necromancer is one who predicts by communicating with the dead. In the story of the Canterville Ghost, Virginia most certainly does communicate with the dead. But since the living know that they will die and the dead don't know anything, that would appear to be a somewhat fruitless exercise. Solomon knew what he was writing about in the book of Ecclesiastes in, chapter 9, verse 5, I think? Yes, chapter 9, verse 5. And just looking at the context in which we find those who consult with familiar spirits and those who predict by consulting with the dead, we have a picture of just how abhorrent this is to the Eternal God. As a result, we need to avoid these sort of things. In the context of this particular play, Virginia Otis is communicating with the dead, and also appears to be, and also there appears in this play a being who is portrayed as a final judge, and that final judgment has not been designated to an angel, be it the angel of death or anybody else. It is a godly action. Now, in the second book of Kings, chapter 23, we read the response of King Josiah to the presence of people who dealt with the spirits of the other world and all of their accoutrements. Today we have a whole array of various forms of media which portray the spirit world either as something which is not to be concerned, that we're not to be worried about, or as something which is so totally innocuous that, children can watch it. We have videos, we have DVDs, we have television, we have the cinema, and the written word. All are used to trivialise and to glamorise the spirit world. And, it's used in such a way as to desensitise the youngsters to the dangers of exposure to these areas. But in 2 Kings chapter 23, beginning of verse 23, we read the following. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, wherein the Passover was holden to the Eternal in Jerusalem. So that sort of sets the time in King Josiah's reign. Moreover, the workers with familiar spirits, and the wizards, and the images, and the idols, and all the abominations that were spied in the land of Judah, and in Jerusalem, did Josiah put away, that he might perform the words of the law which were written in the book of Hilkiah, which were written in the book that Hilkiah the priest found in the house of the Eternal. And like unto him was there no king before him that turned to the Eternal with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to the law of Moses. Neither after him arose any like unto him. Notwithstanding, the Eternal turned not from the fierceness of his wrath, wherein his anger was kindled against Judah, because of the provocations that Manasseh had provoked him withal. Now, you know, it's that sort of tells you that Josiah, though he was a king who turned to God with his whole heart, because of the abominations which Manasseh had allowed beforehand, in this sort of area, God did not turn away his anger from Judah. Now, if an enemy, in this case ghosts or demonic spirits, can convince us that it does not exist or that it is something totally inoffensive, if the enemy presents himself in such a way that we do not recognize him as an enemy, what defense is there when it comes through the door? We are told, destroy them, not to make entertainment out of them. And that's what Josiah did. He destroyed these things. He didn't sit back with his version of the Canterville Ghost all those thousands of years ago. There are some aspects of the plot of the play of the Canterville Ghost that do have a sort of appeal. In particular, the idea of going back 400 years. Time travel as such is not actually covered or considered in this particular play, although you could be excused for thinking that it did. The story is nothing like Bob Hope's appearance in A Yank in the Court of King Arthur. This story is nothing like Star Trek or The Final Countdown, in which time travel, fantastic and fanciful as it is, lends to situations which many find entertaining. I'd like you to turn with me now to the book of Haggai, beginning in verse 12 of chapter 2, because the Canterville Ghost and other similar productions all attempt to draw us away, presenting ghosts and the spirit world in an unreal and a non-existent fashion almost, trivializing and glamorizing that world. And God tells us to avoid these things because they're an abomination to him. In Haggai chapter 2, beginning of verse 12, we read the following. If one bears holy flesh in his skirt of his garment, and with his skirt do touch bread or pottage or wine or oil or any meat, shall it be holy? And the priest answers and said, no. Then Haggai said, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean. Then answered Haggai and said, so is this people, and so is this nation before me, says the Eternal, and so is every work of their hands, that which they offer there is unclean. Remember, if an enemy can convince us that he does not exist, or that he is weak or inoffensive, there is no defence when he comes through the door like a roaring lion. So if you don't even consider buying into these situations which pass for entertainment, you won't be tempted, as I was, to waste 10p on a DVD like this. We are supposed to be a people holy unto the Eternal. This sort of entertainment spreads out before us like a virus. Once it is in our mind, once it is in a child's mind, it is very, very difficult to remove it. In accordance with the words of God, avoid these things and remain a people holy unto God.